Hi, this is Jeff Sachs of Web Yeshiva, continuing with Masechet Ta'anit. Apologies, I had said that we would have shiur next week on our election day, but it turns out that I am not going to be available for the next 2 weeks because of travel abroad that came up. So the next 2 weeks we won't have class, but I'm thinking that what I'm going to do is I'm going to record a shiur and just send out the recording. I don't want to skip. You know, we've gotten so close to the end. We might as well cover every daf in the Gemara and make a siyum. But at this pace, we're not going to finish. And the plan was to finish Masechet Ta'anit and then to return to having the shiur in person in the shul, and to continue to broadcast to those of you who are not close to Efrat. So we won't have class, unfortunately, for the next 2 weeks. Our election day and Yehudi, your election day. But I hope to send out some kind of recording of something to make some progress to get through. I also apologize. I have a very sore throat. I got the COVID boost because I'm going on these trips. They told me to get the COVID booster. And now I have that phenomena where after you get the vaccine, you feel like you have COVID. So I have a bit of a fever and a sore throat. So I'll try to get, I didn't want to cancel because we're not going to have class the next 2 weeks, but we'll have class for as much as we can. But before we begin, Yehudi was not with us last week, of course, because it was Yom Tov Sheni for him. But yet he diligently listened to the recording, and he heard the shout outs to him. But then you've also sent me this afternoon a whole variety of things. So do you want to fill us in on some of those
Yes, under the circumstances, I'd like to, because if you have a sore throat, then maybe we'll give you some rest and we'll talk about this whole thing. If David also was there, then good. Last week I was shouting at the computer. I then realized that there was nobody there, you know. So the whole thing with this, with not being able to cite part of a verse, is certainly not the way things were thought of in at the time the tefillot were composed. And I sent, and Rabbi Sachs, I think it would be a good idea maybe if you wanted to send some of the stuff I sent you
Oh,
to
I
the
had
entire
forwarded
group. But the
it
main
to
point I can make.
Yehudi, are you on the WhatsApp?
Yeah, I'm still here.
No,
You
are
can't
you on
hear
the
me?
WhatsApp? Yes. Are you on the
Hello?
WhatsApp? I can hear you. Are you on the WhatsApp group for the shiur?
I don't know what that means. I just go with WebEx like you told me to.
No, but do you have WhatsApp?
No,
Oh,
I
okay.
don't.
So I had forwarded to the WhatsApp group at least one of the mails you had sent me, but some of the stuff came in rather late in the day and I didn't have a chance to pay
Okay,
full attention.
so but still, you can do it afterwards.
Yeah, okay, so just fill
Oh,
us in.
I don't have WhatsApp
Okay.
altogether. So let's get the basic point here. The basic point is that the tefillah has absolutely no hesitation in quoting parts of verses rather than the entire verse. And the outstanding example is Hashem Hashem Kerach Umchanun Erach Apayim Rav Chesed V'Yemeh Notzir Chesed Lalafim. No, say a woman fresher b'chata'av v'nakei. Well, what do you mean v'nakei? It's v'nakei lo yinakei. Polkei ravon avot avonim. In other words, not only do they stop in the middle, they stop it in such a way that it totally changes the meaning. In other words, they're deliberately keeping out the last half of the verse in order that they can give you what they want you to get out of that verse, which is the good parts, not the bad parts. Okay, so I mean, if the tefillah is prepared to do something like that, then it's quite clear that they're prepared to break up a verse in order to make it look the way they want it to look. And the same thing goes with this whole system of Pisgah B'Emtzah Pasuk. You know, obviously the parshiyot, that's the word I use for a parshiyah, which is what Menachem Liptak uses, is between either a stumah and a petuchah. When you look at it, say, okay, fine, you got it. Thank you so much. You
Yeah,
know,
this is
and all this.
that's in the Koran Humashim, the topography represents the parashiyot. Now, by parasha, we use parasha colloquially to mean
Parshiyah is the word.
that
Parsha is
week's
the entire Parsha.
Torah portion. But here, this is called a parashat petucha, because the text is justified right, but then the rest of the line is left open, and then the next pasuk begins on a new line. And then a parashat stuma, I don't have an example of here on this page, but you know what it looks like. It would be that one pasuk
letter,
here.
Fine letter space.
There's a space of about 5-letter length.
Oh, mine, then, 9 letters, Rabbi Sachs.
Nine letters. And then the next verse would begin following.
The same line. That's the same. It's a 9-letter space, and then the text begins and resumes in the same line. So you should look at it. I hope everybody gets this. I think everybody's here has some kind of an Anglo background. So a parshat petucha is the equivalent of a stop sign, and a parshat stuma is the equivalent of a yield sign. I hope that works for the group.
Right. Here, like a paragraph, clear. Like a paragraph break.
Types of paragraph breaks. A petucha is a complete break, and a stuma is, like I said, the stop and yield sign, I think, is the best.
That's a good metaphor. Yeah.
Okay. So now.
But there, I'm not sure. So then you sent me a whole variety of examples where there are parashia breaks mid pasuk, like in Aseret HaDibrot and in other things. But I'm not sure that that's what this principle of kol posik delo paske Moshe ano lo paskina.
I'm simply saying we have to be aware of the fact that the parshiyot long preceded the psukim. In other words, the Torah was given a parshiyot. The Dead Sea Scrolls have parshiyot. But the setup where you have psukim, that came much later. And by the time it came, the psukim had the people who set up the psukim, I believe that happened around or right after the time of the Churban, must have thought that some of the parshiyot are ending in a way that they don't want them to end. So they rephrased it by putting in psukim that include pieces of two parshiyot. But that's a different issue. The main issue is the issue about, look at Kedusha. In Kedusha, we proceed to use pieces of psukim. Kadosh, 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 Hashem. So that's not the whole pasuk. Baruch Kor Hashem Mekomo. That's not the whole pasuk. I mean, the only place we do the kedusha right is in Nevoah Tzion Goel, when we actually do the whole thing. And in other words, it's very clear that the tefillah couldn't care less about what the pasuk is as originally structured. If they can quote the whole thing, my tova, my arm. If they don't feel like quoting the whole thing, it doesn't bother them a bit. In Tachlin, every day, you say, Barogez Rachem Tizkor, which is the last 3 words of a whole pasuk in Chabakuk. On Shabbat morning, you say, Mizmor Shir Yom HaShabbat Tov HaHodot Hashem. Whatever happened was Amir Shimcha El Yom. I mean, I could give you, I mean, I wrote you. You know, there's no way it's just a buzz about the fact that the tefillah doesn't give a hoot about. The tefillah is perfectly prepared to rearrange Psukim and Tanakh or cut them up into pieces, do whatever it wants with them in order to make the tefillah, in order to make the points that the tefillah wants to make. Okay? And the very fact that you have an Amora, an important one, saying it's perfectly okay to read a half a pasuk and count it as if you read the whole thing, shows that at that point, this is not really carved up in stone. It existed, but not to the point, remember, I think by the time we get to the machloket that we're learning here about how you want to deal with the bit with 2.5 psukim, by that time, most of the major tefillot are already written. Stuff like Shmona Esrei, Birchat HaMazon, Kedusha, they're out there. That means at that point, nobody felt that there was anything wrong with quoting a part of a pasuk. That's what I wanted to say.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you for that, Yudi. David, you wanted to add something? No? Okay. Folks, I put in the chat the link to join those of you that do have WhatsApp. There's a WhatsApp group for the Shiur where sometimes we send out resources or other things. So if you're not a member of that WhatsApp group, assuming you have that app, which of course mercifully went down today for a few hours, giving everybody a little bit of peace and quiet. It was a much more productive morning, I assure you. So let's get back to the Gemara here at the top of Daf Kaf Chet Omer Aleph 28A. The Gemara quotes here the Mishnah. As a matter of fact, I'd like to look at the Mishnah. We didn't learn the Mishnah properly because the somewhat unusual typographical nature of this perek is that all of the Mishnayot in the chapter appear at the beginning of the chapter, as opposed to the normal, the more common. This happens in a number of places in the Talmud, but the more common feature is that you have a section of the Mishnah and then the Gemara, and then a section of the Mishnah and then the Gemara. But here, let's go back to the Mishnah. Just for convenience sake, I have it Xeroxed here from the Kehati Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Parasha Gedola. The Mishnah had been talking about the Ma'amadot, that the non-Kohanim that were on duty that week would gather in their city, and they would fast, and they would read the Torah. They would read specifically from Ma'aseh Breshit, what we all read in Shul last Shabbat, from the beginning of Genesis. But because it gets into this question of how to divide up the Aliyot, this is how we've gotten onto this topic of dividing Psukim, which Yehudi filled us in on so nicely, and other related things. And I mentioned that there are parallel Gemarot in Masechet Megillah, which we had learned together a couple of years ago. So a parasha gedolah. A parasha here means the section that one olet, the Torah, reads. We have a principle that when you go up to the Torah to get aliyah, the aliyah never contains less than three psukim. So for our purposes, what the Mishnah here calls a parasha, that's more or less what we call an aliyah, right? So a parasha gedola, korin oto b'shnayim, a parasha gedola that has more than three psukim, that has at least four psukim, or in the case of the Torah reading that we're talking about, five psukim. They read on the first day of the Ma'amadot, they read from the beginning of Breshit up to the two first parashiot. But the problem is, how do you divide eight psukim? You see from here to here is only eight verses. So how do you divide that between three readers, each of them getting the minimum three? So this is called from Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Chet, the reading of the second day of creation, that has three psukim. So the third Oleh, the third person, the Yisrael, who goes up to get the Aliyah, he can read all of this. So how do you divide the first five verses? How do you divide the first five verses between two people? So the Mishnah asks Parasha Gedola. Hold on. Parasha Gedola, Korino to Bishnayim. Two people read that. They divide it amongst themselves. Vaktana, Parasha Ktana, Biyochid. But a parasha that has only three psukim, three verses, so an individual would read that. And when do they do this? At the Ma'amadot, B'Shacharit, Uva Musaf, Uva Mincha. Now, our Gemara is going to have to try to figure this out. How do you read this? It can't be read the way I just read it, that they would read Torah at Shacharit, Musaf, and Mincha. No. B'Shacharit, Uva Musaf, they would read the Torah each morning. Comma. Period. Take a breath. Parasha Tucha. Uva mincha nichnasim v'korin al pihen. But at mincha, they would gather in the afternoon and they would read it by heart. They would recite it by heart. The question is, there's something a little vague here. When do they read it? They read it b'shacharit. So should this be read as they divide up the parasha, however they divide it, and they read it at shacharit, comma, and at musaf and mincha, they gather and read it by heart? Or is it that they read it in the manner in which they prescribed at Shacharit and Musaf, comma, and then at Mincha they gather and read it by heart? They gather and they read it by heart, Kikorin et HaShma. Shma, which is of course also verses from the Torah, is always the example of a recitation of a biblical text. After all, we recite Shema, the three paragraphs of Shema, twice a day. It's a text that's very well known, that's known by heart. In Yiddish, there's an expression to say that you know something very well. Or in English, the Yiddish metaphorical equivalent to the Yiddish phrase, I know it like the back of my hand, is to say, you know it like Ashrei. Right? What does it mean, you know it like Ashrei? Ashrei is a mizmor that we recite three times a day. It has the mnemonic advantage of being an acrostic, which helps aid knowing it by heart. Every Tinok Shel Beit Rabban knows Ashrei Baal Peh. Right? Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha. It also has that catchy tune, which helps for memorization. Ashrei Yoshvei Veitecha Ojalu Kazela. There's certain things you know by heart. You know, you say, you know, Oleinu by heart. Also recited three times a day with a catchy tune. So for the Mishnah, in the Mishnah metaphor, that's to say, to recite a biblical text by heart is kikore et ashma. Right? So they would recite that day's portion of Genesis by heart at Mincha. And on Erev Shabbat by Mincha, lo hayu nichnasim mipnei kvod Shabbat. And on Friday afternoon at Mincha, they wouldn't have this assembly at all because of Kavod Shabbat. People were busy getting ready for Shabbat. So let's go back to the Gemara. Parasha Gedola, Korin Ota B'Shnayim B'Shacharit V'Musa Mincha Korin Al Pien V'Chule. That's the quote from the Mishnah. So the Gemara asks, Iboy Elohu, an information question. Heichi Ka'omar B'shacharit uv'musaf korin ota b'sefer uv'mincha korin ota al peh k'korin et ashma. O dilma hochiktani b'shacharit korin ota b'sefer uv'musaf uv'mincha korin ota al peh k'korin et ashma. Where do you put the comma? Is it that you read it from the Torah when you're doing it at shacharit and musaf, full stop, and then at mincha you don't trouble everyone to take out the Sefer Torah, you just recite those verses by heart? Or is it at Shacharit you read it from the Torah, full stop, Uva Musaf Uva Mincha, at Musaf and Mincha, you do that ceremony in a more efficient fashion by just reciting the verses by heart? So the Gemara wants to resolve this question. Toshma. Toshma is the answer to the Iboyes Ema. It's for the Iboy Elohu. Iboy Elohu is an introduction. I like, Yehudi, I liked your metaphor of the stop sign and the yield sign, because that's what these headlines in the Gemara are. Iboy Elohu is a question. But you know, like Eskimos have multiple words for snow, which may not actually be true, but is a very well-known idea which captures something true, even if it's not lexicographically true. The Gemara has many different words for questions. Iboy Elohu is an information question. It is not a matkif. It's not a metve, right? It's not an attack question. Much of the questioning in the Gemara are attack questions, right? Iboy Elohu, boy, I've told you many times, boy has three meanings. What are the three meanings of boy?
Require, inquire, and never the third.
Ah!
I feel like Rick Perry.
What was the third?
You can remember the third thing.
To inquire, to require, and to desire. Right?
Right.
It doesn't rhyme. That's supposed to be a remember. You need to find a better rhyme.
It's a mnemonic. Those are the three nuances of that root boy. Right? Titkabel tzalooton uba'oton. What are be'oton?
Requests.
Requests.
I always thought it was a request, but I can see what you're saying.
It's a request. That's to inquire, to require, or to desire. Right? So iboyes lehu. Iboy lehu. Right? He asked of them. He asked the question. What does it mean that you have a question? It means that there's a piece of information. There's a piece of information that you have that I require. It's an information question. Toshma, come and listen. Toshma introduces the piece of information, the piece of evidence that's being entered that contains the piece of information you're requiring. How do we read the Mishnah? Toshma, Detanya, we introduce a Braita, which is usually a very good way to clarify the meaning of a difficult to understand Mishnah, because we're going to look at a parallel text, which sometimes helps you over that hump. Detanya b'shacharit uvamusaf nichnasim leveit haKnesset v'korin kederech shekorin kol hashana. Oh, that's where the period goes. It's shacharit and musaf, comma. You read the Torah the way you normally read the Torah the rest of the year. Right? Uva mincha, however, at mincha later in the afternoon, yachid korei ota al peh. The individual recites the verses assigned for that day from the book of Genesis by heart. Omer Rabbi Yossi, v'chi yachid yachol lekrot divrei Torah al peh b'tzibur? But wait a second, now you have a different, having resolved the problem of how to understand the Mishnah, we have a different problem. Generally speaking, we have a principle that dvarim shebichtav I atara shayla amram baal peh. There's a general principle. Now you're gonna marshal a dozen different good examples of biblical texts that are recited by heart all the time. Get what would be the number one example? The example that we just gave. Shema is recited by all the time. Ashrei is the very byword of a biblical text that's recited by Al Peh. As a matter of fact, of course, before the advent of printed Sidurim, all of the Mizmorim that are part of the Tefillah, right, would have been recited by Al Peh.
On what to the point that Shemona Esrei was recited by Al Peh originally?
Shemona Esrei is not a biblical text.
Right, but I'm just trying to make a point. You know, people knew that before they had printed text, they had to do the whole thing.
There's no principled problem with reciting rabbinic texts by heart. As a matter of fact, rabbinic texts were initially, ideally, recited by heart. But there is a special gzeirat chachamim against reciting biblical texts by heart, and you can understand why, right? Because it's a written text, and the recitation of it in its precise exact formula is what's required. So,
but don't you think that in ancient times people basically had to do Kriyat Shema by heart,
obviously. So the question is, when do we apply this principle of you can't recite biblical texts by heart? It's obviously not a universal restriction, because we've already listed plenty of exceptions to the rule. Right. So what is this idea that you cannot recite biblical texts by heart? So Tashma. So we resolved the first problem. We said the Kriyat Torah in the morning, Shacharit and Musaf, that is done from the Sefer Torah. But at these Ma'amadot, right? And again, this is not something that any of us have ever experienced. We're not talking about the Kriyat Torah for Mincha on Shabbat, or the Kriyat Torah at Mincha on a fast day. We're talking about the special kriya, the special reading that was done, the special reading of the book of Genesis, the Parshat Genesis, Parshat Bereshit, that was done at the Ma'amadot when it was your turn once a year to go to Beit HaMikdash, or when it was your townsman's turn and you stayed behind fasting and praying and davening and reading the Torah. So at Mincha, you would recite those verses from Parshat Bereshit at Mincha by heart. So the Gemara says, all right, but how are you allowed to do that? How are you allowed to recite verses by heart, right? Yachol lekrot divrei Torah al peh b'tzibur, ela kulan nichnasim v'korin oto al peh ki korin et hashma. So what is it? When are you allowed to recite the verses by heart? Not a yachid, not an individual, but if it's being recited collectively, if it's being recited by heart, community, why is it being recited by heart? Because obviously people didn't have printed chumashim or printed sidurim, and they didn't want to trouble everyone to bring the Sefer Torah out. So the Braita is explaining that when they would read it by heart, they would, first of all, A, only do it at the afternoon davening at the mincha, and B, they would do it as a kind of communal reading, but not as a kind of individual reading. When is the individual allowed? I mean, we all, by the way, generally speaking, you know, the halacha says when you daven, you should daven from a sitter. When you bench, you should bench from a bencher. Or, you know, we have the phones now, right? Even though we all know benching by heart, let's say, how often does it happen? How often does it happen that you're davening and you get to in Shema, right? Your mind wanders, you forget what you're up to. Uchtavtam al mezuzot b'techo v'sharecho. Right, that phrase appears twice in Shema, and you get to that verse. You say, wait, is that the first or the second? Right? Did I skip the whole second paragraph?
When I worked at Mitzvah Shvatim, when Eliakim Rubinstein was Attorney General, I was always amazed that he could be there because he would come to Mincha, and it's an incredibly demanding job, Attorney General. Every decision in the country was on his desk. And I would find myself distracted during tefillah. And at one point, I got the energy, the courage, I went over to him and I said, I have to ask you a question. I find myself distracted during tefillah. How in the world do you not get distracted with everything that's on your desk when you're coming down from Mincha? He said, first of all, know that I do get distracted. And second, he says, I always look at the sitter because if I don't, I just will be end up, you know.
Yeah.
But how can they make a requirement like that until everybody had a princess seat?
No, so once you, this is not a requirement in Chazal, but in Achronim, we develop a halacha that all things being equal, one should be careful to, even somebody who will daven with their eyes closed should have the sitter in front of them.
I've been in shuls where they have a minhag to do Kriyat Shema out loud together.
Out loud.
Is that related to this? That is
absolutely, and that's what they're describing here. When it says here that they would read the psukim, Bereshit, Bara Elokim, at the Shema, at the Aretz, etc., they would read it together the way you read it at Shema. First of all, they read it probably with a Tamei HaMikra. Second of all, they were all reciting it together out loud because that is both an aid to Kavanah, but it's also maybe even more important, an aid to accuracy. And maybe there would be one person who either was what was called a Kara, meaning one of those photographic memory type people, right? Who knew, I mentioned last week, I sent you last week that old essay of mine about Fahrenheit 451, you know, where you had people who had absorbed certain texts, you know, when the books had all been banned and burned, there were people, the texts were preserved in the memories of certain individuals. So maybe there's one person who could be counted on to recite the text properly, and he would lead the communal recitation of the verses, which would be a kind of guarantee that they would all get it right, that they would say the words, they would all say the words properly. This, by the way, you know, this was even more important for women, because women very often didn't even have the literacy that men had, and certainly not in Hebrew texts. And there was a position in some communities. I have a very dear old friend named, his name is Ari Furziger. Maybe you know his brother is a professor at Bar Ilan, Adam Furziger. What's a Furziger? Because they claim the name comes from like their great-grandmother or great-great-grandmother who was a Furziger. Furziger in Yiddish was the woman who knew the prayers. And in the Ezrat Nashim, which was usually high, high up, behind a thick curtain, behind a wall, there were no sidurim. And even if there were sidurim, there were a lot of women that the sitter wouldn't have helped because they didn't have facility to read a Hebrew text. So the Furziger was the woman who knew the davening very well or was able to read from the sitter. And she would lead the davening, not like a chazan, right? She would say the words out loud so that the other women could recite them along with her. Right? And that's how they got their family name. Your
predecessor as editor of tradition has a great story in Emanuel Feldman about this woman who said the whole thing every time because
This is when Shabbos Rosh Chodesh Chanukah. Yeah, I always post that on the Facebook. What was her name? Mrs. Goldfinger? Mrs.
I assume it wasn't her real name. I imagine.
No, it wasn't her name. It was about a woman, you can put a link to it. It's in the thing. It was called The Shabbos of Mrs. Golden Hirsch or Goldfinger or something like that. Right? In other words, the woman, she didn't know it. All she knew how to read, she didn't know what she was saying. So she would open, they'd say the Shemoneh Esrei begins on page 52. So she would say everything. She would say the Shemoneh Esrei. She would say Al Anisim for Hanukkah, for Purim. She'd say Yala Viovo and fill in all the blanks. And she'd say V'tein Talum Matar and V'tein Bracha, Mashiva Ruach, and right? And she would just recite from beginning to end. So he said he always loved Shabbos, Rosh Chodesh, Hanukkah, right? Because that's the only davening where you press play at the beginning and you recite everything until you get to the end. You don't have to skip anything. Right? The once a year, right? Al tia baz lechol adam shein lecha adam shein losha. I'm forgetting what was the name.
There was one morning in shul, I think it was at Lincoln Square, where there was a person davening shacharit, the entire shacharit from beginning to end without a siddur.
Yeah. There are people that do that. God bless them if you can have the kavanah. I find it's very... So anyway, so the halacha is, the halacha from the Achron, not in Chazal, that all things being equal, you should certainly have a sitter with you. And if you're concentrating, you close your eyes, it's fine. But, you know, sometimes you get distracted. And therefore, it's good to say. I started doing, you know, these little sticky tabs. So I, like today, I have a couple of these that I keep in my sitter. So today, I put it by Yala Viovo so that when I would get to that page, it would remind me because, you know, it's amazing. It's not like I daven Shemoneh Esrei for 45 minutes, right? In the couple of minutes it takes to get from the beginning of Shemoneh Esrei until Yalav Yavo, even though I know it's Rosh Chodesh, and even though somebody clapped on the bima and said Yalav Yavo, right? By the time you get there, you're on autopilot, God forbid, right, and you just speed right through. Okay, this is all a side point. So right, how did they...
Was there ever a time when people did not daven Musaf right after Shacharit? I mean, we tend to assume that that's the way it has to be done. But it seems to me that it doesn't have to be done that way.
The Gemara in Brachot, of course, has the question about if you delay Musaf until after the time that it's
Mincha,
daven Mincha from Mincha Gedola, which one should you do first?
Right. But what I'm saying is there
there's a Gemara in the fourth parak of Bracho that talks about that they would daven Shacharis, and then they would have a Shiur. They would have the parak, the Pirka, and then they would daven Musaf afterwards. So I think that
they don't have to go together.
No, a lot of times,
because the way the Mishnah actually reads, it says, B'shacharit b'musaf b'mincha. In other words, it does not say b'shacharit b'musaf. In other words, I looked to check it in the Kaufman text too. There's no break between the word musaf and mincha. It just says b'shacharit b'musaf b'mincha.
Right, but in other words, you can't read the Mishnah as parashah gedolah korin oto b'shacharit. That's I intentionally misread it when I first presented it because to demonstrate that it can't be read that way. It can't be read as Parsha Gedola Korinota b'Shnayim b'Shacharit u'Musaf u'Mincha, period, and then Korin al Pihen. In other words, you need something before Korin al Pihen. The question is what do you Korin al Pi? In other words, it says you read from the text A, B, C is read by heart. So are you saying you read from the text A, comma?
That's what I have. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah, but that idea is not entertained by the Gemara. The idea is that something is
but the Mishnah does that. The Gemara doesn't always give you what the Mishnah gives you. Right. In other words, the Gemara sometimes twists the Mishnah and comes up with something completely different than what it actually says. The Mishnah just says, "B'shacharit u'musaf u'mincha."
Yes,
I
was influenced by the Gemara's understanding of the Mishnah, but it's true. You might have read an alternative. So let's go back to the Mishnah.
Steinsaltz Kol puts Yom a period there.
A period after Musaf.
Yeah, but that's not actually right. The text. That's him.
Well, I mean, there's no punctuation in the text.
That's my point.
Right. Okay. But as he's punctuating,
that he's doing that because
he punctuates the. By the way, the Kahati also. The Kahati puts the.
But I'm saying these people are doing that because of what the Gemara says, not because this is what the Mishnah says.
Seder, but
we're never going to find a manuscript of the Mishnah that was ignoring the Gemara. So there's not even a possibility to entertain something like that. You're not going to find the Minchan's not going to not have ignored the how the Gemara later explains it. It's I'm sure.
So here's the Mishnah. The Mishnah goes on. Kol yom shiesh bo halel. Ein bo ma'amad b'shacharit. But if there's a day like Hallel, let's say like Chanukah, right? Kahati explains according to our Gemara, shekorin bo Hallel ve'ein bo korban musaf kegon b'Chanukah. Right. In other words, this is not the previous case where you have shacharit and musaf. This is just shacharit, but you have shacharit and Hallel.
But why don't they just say B'Chanukah? I mean, because that's the only time that would actually happen.
But
would they say Kol Yom Shiyesh Bo Halil? Why don't they just say B'Chanukah instead of that? In other words, there's no other possibility. They don't know about saying Halil on Rosh Chodesh. As far as they're concerned, the only way this could act.
Well, actually, in all cases, Rosh Chodesh wouldn't be relevant because Rosh Chodesh, there is Musaf.
Yeah. I'm trying to make a point now. You're quite right. Okay. But my point is, why use a phrase like Kol Yom Shiyesh Bo Halel? What you really mean is B'Chanukah.
Don't you know what the answer is? Don't you know what the answer is? Don't you know what the answer is? This is proof that Yom Ha'atzma'ut B'Mishnah Minayin. It's hidden here. There's another day where you have Halel but not Musaf on Yom Ha'atzma'ut. Chazal must have foreseen that there'd be the establishment of the state of Israel, and that we would argue about which brand of Hallel to say. No, I don't know. It's a good question, Yehudi. It's a good question. It might have to do with the stylistic framing of this Mishnah against the other. Did we lose Yehudi?
No, you didn't lose me. I'm here. Yeah, but I don't know why you don't see my picture, but I'm definitely here.
So, cool. Kol yom sheyesh bo halel ein bo ma'amad b'shacharit korban musaf ein bo b'ni'ila korban etzim. The Mishnah will explain in a minute what the korban etzim are. Oh, hold on. View. Rotate right. Korban etzim bo b'mincha divi Rabbi Akiva. Omer lo ben azai kach haya Rabbi Yehoshua shone. Korban musaf ein bo b'mincha. Korban etzim Ein bo b'ni'ila. What does this mean? Korban b'yom shiyesh korban musaf. Let's say like on Rosh Chodesh, like today. Ein bo b'mincha. They would not have the special ma'amad reading and ceremony at mincha on that day. Maybe because it's a more festive day. Maybe because it's a more busy day, the kol shechein b'musaf atzmo, they would not have the special ma'amad service. Aval yesh bo ma'amad b'tfilat ni'ila. What do you mean tfilat ni'ila? Because on these days when they were fasting, they added their own special tfilah. Ein bo ma'amad afilu b'tfilat ni'ila. V'kol shechein she'ein bo ma'amad b'mincha. Shekein korban ha'itzim haya samuch lemincha kodim tamid shel bein ha'arbayim. What's the korban itzim? So we'll see here in the Gemara that when they came back from Galut Bavel, they discovered that there wasn't enough wood. You know, like they have now in Europe and in Ukraine and all these other things. There's all this question of, you know, you pinch back the fuel supply a bit and it ruins the whole operation. The whole economy is dependent upon this flow of oil. So in the Beit HaMikdash, they didn't use petroleum. They used wood. The the amount of wood, of firewood, that would have to be used in the Mikdash, certainly for the Ma'aracha, for the, I'll call it a bonfire, you know, the arrangement of the wood on the Mikdash, on the Mizbeach, for the sacrificing, for the burning of the sacrifices, but also all types of the other operation of the Beit HaMikdash. The amount of wood required was quite significant. As a matter of fact, one of the four major chambers in the Beit HaMikdash was the Lishchat HaEtzim, right? There was a woodshed, a very large place where the wood was. So when they come back from Bavel, they didn't have enough wood. They didn't have enough wood. And different families volunteered to bring wood. And this becomes known as the Korban HaEtzim. It's not a Korban in the sense of bringing an animal and sacrificing it. It was more of a Nidava, right? That would be brought, and the merit of having brought that Korban HaEtzim was quite significant. And this now comes
even in the Torah, Korban doesn't have to be an animal or even a plant. It could be mineral too, because in the Siyam brought Karak Kesef. And that's carbono, karakesef achat. In other words, carbon could be animal, vegetable, or mineral.
Right. So the Mishnah, the Gemara goes on from that Mishnah that we just saw, kol yom sheyesh bo halel ve'in bo ma'amad v'chulei. Ma hefresh ben zeh lazeh? Well, what's the difference between, between these two different things? A day when there is musaf and a day when there is, and a day when they're bringing this korban etzim, this gift of the wood. So the Gemara says, "Lalu divrei Torah." Musaf is a Torah obligation to bring the korban musaf, and the others, the giving of the wood, that's divrei sofrim. That's dirabanan. That's the difference between the two things. So now, having introduced the idea of the Korban Etzim. Sorry, I lost my place. Zman Atzei Kohanim Va'am. The Mishnah goes on to list the different times that these families and their descendants would bring those Korbanot. So the Gemara asks, Tanu Rabbanan, Lama Hutzrach Lomar Zman Atzei Kohanim Va'am? Why does the Mishnah have to list all of these different dates on which different people would bring the wood? You know, it's like saying, you know, like we have a kiddush in shul after the early minyan every Shabbos. So it's like listing, you know, like the Kerwins are making kiddush on this parsha and the Saxons are making kiddush on that parsha, right? Like, what's the point of recording that? So Tanu Rabbanan, Lamu Tzurch Lomar Zman Atzei Kohanim Va'am, Amru, Kesha'alu B'nei HaGola Lo Matzu Etzim B'lishcha, Va'amdu Eilu V'hitnadvu Mishalahem. So when they come back at the beginning of the Shivat Zion and the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, people took it upon themselves to make sure that there would be wood to keep the Beit HaMikdash running. V'kach hitnu nevi'im shebeneihem sha'afilu l'shcham le'ya etzim. And the nevi'im of those days made it conditional that even if the Beit HaMikdash was full to the last inch with wood, you elu mitnadvim mishalahen, shne'emar, a pasuk from Nehemiah, v'hagoralot, hipalnu al korban ha'itzim ha'kohanim ha'levi'im v'ha'am. V'ha'am means the Yisraelim, everyone else. L'havi levet elokeinu levet avotenu le'itim mizumanim shana b'shana leva'er al mizbeach Hashem elokeinu k'katuv b'Torah. They took it upon themselves as a kind of neder that they would bring the wood to deliver, and it becomes a kind of set thing. And even though it's it's voluntary. It takes on the force of obligation. I apologize. We're going to stop here again for those of you that joined us late. Oh, by the way, welcome. I see there's somebody here named Yoni Roth, who I think you might be new to us. Is that true? Where are you joining us from?
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Where are you, Yoni Roth? Okay.
Hi. Well, I'm on.
Hi. Yoni Roth, thank you. Are you there? Where are you joining us from? Where are you?
I'm joining you from down south, from Kibbutz Torah.
Oh, how nice. We have somebody who's usually with us also from Kibbutz Keturah, but he's not here tonight.
No kidding.
Cecil.
Oh, really? Huh.
Yes, he's usually with us, but not tonight. Okay, well welcome. But again, apologies. We will not have the class for the next 2 weeks because I'll be away, but I'm hoping to record at least one or two shiurim and to send out the recording so that we can kind of make progress because we really are nearing the end of Masechet Ta'anit.
You're going to send it by email now, not just by WhatsApp.
I'll send it by all necessary channels.
Okay.
All right.
Yishar kochacha, and have a good trip.
Thanks.
See ya.
Yishar kochacha.